Radio Gorgeous. Listen anywhere, anytime. My name's Jostine Pembroke.
And I'm Donna Freed.
So today on Radio Gorgeous, we're going to be talking about, wait for it, toxic friendships. You had any?
I don't know, I might have been a toxic friend.
Love it. We're going to out
you. Or just a bad friend.
Yeah, we're going to out you today, which is going to be great. And we're going to talk about that. It was inspired by the author of the week, because she's written a book about toxic friendships.
Yes.
And you interviewed her. What's her name?
Harriet Lane. And the book is Her. And it's the story
of... about her.
Yes, exactly. Her. The two women have met before. One remembers, one doesn't.
Oh.
The one who remembers, it was a meeting that was very, you know, caused a turning point in her life. The other one doesn't even remember.
So they met in business, did they?
When they were young.
Okay.
And now they're older, and...
I'd love to know which one remembers. Is it the baddie or the goodie remembers?
Oh, you'll find
out. Oh, God.
You'll find out.
Yeah.
No, it's great because it's told from both of their perspectives.
Oh,
and
great.
You're sort of in the head of the one who knows.
Yeah.
But you get to see what the other one's thinking. And you're,
that's such a good idea.
Yeah.
Do you sympathize with both of them in the end?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no. It's good and creepy.
It's
a real page turner.
Oh, fabulous.
But very well written.
Oh, okay.
So it's not just suspense. It's
because why? What's her background?
She was a journalist.
Yeah.
And her first novel was Alice Always.
Okay.
And she stopped being a journalist because her eyesight is failing dramatically. And so she couldn't, you know, do all the running around. But what she realized she missed was the writing. And then it sort of gave her the freedom to...
And you talked in depth about her losing her sight, didn't you? So that's going to be really moving and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, next on this week, we've got Gorgeous Escapes.
Gorgeous Escapes.
With Sarah Tucker, who is so lively. And she just arrives here and she's as thin as a rake and she's a yogi and she's so full of energy and she's fizzing and she's exciting. And she's excited because her new book's coming out, The A to Zen of Travel.
What's that?
Well, it's about, so if you've got a crisis in your life, or the opposite, or you're feeling like you want an adventure, or you want a healing, or you want, you look at what's going on in your life, and then she'll help you prescribe what holiday would be really good for you.
Ah, she diagnoses a holiday.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, what you do after a divorce, what you do after a crisis. I can't tell you anymore. You've really got to listen.
So like if you've just gone through a divorce, don't go someplace like super romantic.
Yes, exactly. She said that would be really good to go trekking, you know,
right.
Physical, you know.
Wow.
And then she says things like, you know, sometimes you've got to be pampered, you know, sometimes your problem, you know, you need to be cocooned, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So she gives some really good advice. So it's kind of like therapy and travel together. It's such a good idea, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's traveling from a female perspective, which is what Sarah specializes
in. Well, because frequently you are, you know, vacation, you're like, oh, I just need to get out of here. But maybe you don't. Maybe, you know, or maybe you're going on the exactly wrong.
Yes.
You know, sometimes you get there and you realize, oh, God. What I really needed was...
When you go on holiday with a massive crowd of people and you're knackered at the end of it.
Yeah,
and you think, that wasn't a holiday. It was great fun, but you actually need a holiday afterwards.
I need a holiday for my holiday.
Exactly. Well, it's so exciting because holiday time is starting soon.
It's coming soon.
My children have broken up. Yours haven't yet. But,
Not yet.
God, it's very exciting. The only trouble is they're now wanting money and, you know, driving here and I'm dropping drink off later somewhere because Leo couldn't carry it.
Yes. You're on a booze delivery.
Yeah, I am. I'm not allowed in the house, obviously.
So you leave it by the back door. And,
exactly.
And get back in your car and drive away.
Then
text that it's there.
Yeah, tradesman's entrance. Exactly.
Oh.
So let's have a listen. About who's on Gorgeous Gossip this week?
As it is summer.
Yeah.
And there's opera in the park and there's, you know, the globe is in full swing.
Yeah. And I just booked my tickets yesterday to go to the open air theatre.
There you go.
Corgi and Bess.
But so I went around. There's also a lot of theatre going on. So I went around and did a little roundup of the things, you know, that are on. There is a play called Intimate Apparel. and it's about a black seamstress who makes lingerie, or as you might say, lingerie, for very wealthy white clients.
Oh, it sounds excellent. Yes. And where's that on?
That's on at the Park. Mm. Shudders is also on at the Park, and that is three American plays sort of celebrating the journey of women over the last century. And then also there's one called Perseverance Road, and that's sort of a family drama at the Bush Theater. So yeah, I spoke to a bunch of the women who are involved in these productions.
Let's have a listen.
RadioGorgeous.com.
I am at the Park Theater and speaking with two women, Matilda Thorpe and Joanna Kirkland, who are in an all-female production of three different plays. Together, the collection is called Shudders. Tell me about Shudders.
Well, it's really interesting because you said all female, but in fact, many of the parts are men. But in this wonderful way that the world is changing, we are playing all the parts, and it doesn't matter anymore. So that we're free now to do our version of this play, and it's not about needing to be a bloke or needing to be a woman, but actually it's a bigger thing than that. And I think that's what's so exciting about this particular production, is that we are looking at it in a different way. And an all-female cast bring a very different feel to a play.
Well, and that is a theatrical tradition, to have all male casts and men playing female parts. And it occurs to me, you can take this other places then.
You're right. I mean, Shakespeare started, obviously, that we know men always played the women. But I think that was a sort of caricature. We're not acting blokes. We are ourselves as actors being these characters. And that, I think, is the new change. That's where we're moving forward. It's not impressions of men. It's not impressions of what a man might think. It is, as an actor, taking on that role, whether I'm playing an old woman or an old man, I still need to find that character. And that's the difference in this play.
Fantastic.
I think that it's blind cast throughout as well. Skin colour, sex. I'm also pregnant. We ignore that most of the time, apart from in one play. I think it's the idea is that an audience are asked to believe in the characters rather than any kind of physical representation of them. And I think that that does make it interesting. And I do think that women bring a different slant to things anyway. It's also really nice being in a room full of women all day. Like, it's a different vibe. We're on a different level. Not sure it's easier for our male director, but it's certainly fun for us.
Yeah, so tell me about the plays individually, because one is an established play, and two are new writing.
One is was written in 1910 by Susan Glasspell. And this is called Trifles, and it's a sort of murder mystery. And what's wonderful about this play is that the murder is solved, if you like, by the supposedly unimportant women who are sitting around while the men go and try and find the clues and the evidence. And this is a fascinating play. It's way ahead of its time. And I don't think it's ever been performed in this country before, and that makes it very exciting to be part of. And one of the other plays is called Cast of Characters. I'm sure you know when you open a play, you have the index of the characters at the front of the play. And what happens in this play is that we actually expound on that cast list and tell the story through just that first list of characters. And then as our play ends, so the real play begins.
Interesting. And the final play?
The third play is called The Deer by Brooke Allen. It's an interesting piece. It's kind of half fantasy, half dream world, and half very gritty reality about grief and death and relationships, amongst other things. You're asked to believe very firmly in some real relationships and some real pain, and you're also asked to imagine a world where things happen on a slightly different level.
Interesting. Now, tell me about your director, because I understand he's your nephew.
Yes, well, I don't want to claim nepotism, but yes, my director is also my nephew. And I actually saw him being born, which is even more bizarre.
had I known, you have to take direction from him.
Yes, and had I known, I would have been on full makeup at his birth and recited a little Shakespeare as my audition speech. But it is extraordinary because, family aside, I think him knowing me, he, as well as he does, he's able to understand me and our note-taking is a sort of easier. I'm more in tune with where he's at, I think, and that's lovely. But on the other hand, I'm a professional. We're not bringing the family thing into the rehearsal at all, as it should be. I think he's very talented. We're very privileged to have him, I think, because he's a young, new director with a very, very different approach to theatre. It's unusual for a man to decide to do plays for all women. And that, I think, is because of his generation is sort of blowing apart the old rules about theatre. It has been a very disappointing time in the last 15, 20 years with all the real live action Big Brother stuff, where people are really only ever allowed to be who they are at that moment. And I think theatre is so much broader than that. And it feels like the new generation don't have those, they're not chained up with those old-fashioned feelings. They are coming with a new approach to theatre. And it's very exciting. And the fact that he's my nephew is just a cherry on the cake.
Yeah. And how is that? Does that show in any way that they're related in the rehearsal space, or is that intimidating to you as an actress?
No, not at all. I mean, I knew in advance because I'd worked with Jack before last Christmas. So I knew that Matilda was his aunt. But no, we wouldn't, and apart from the surname, we wouldn't know. And I'm not noticing any particular difference in the way he treats any one of us, apart from that he personalises it for our varying insecurities or character choices.
Or divaness. I'm diva-tuned. And so tell me, because I understand he spent some time in Chicago, and while it's normal for plays to come over from New York and go the other way, these are all Chicago-based plays.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct. I think that, again, is a nice thing for us as actors. As you say, most stuff comes from New York or L.A., Jack spent 3 years dancing with the Joffrey Ballet in Chicago, and during his time there, got to know a lot of the Chicago art scene. It's very strong in Chicago. Theatre especially has a big support there. And he was privileged enough to meet several writers and see some very new work. And he's described the Chicago style of theatre to us in rehearsal, which is very experimental, very broad, very powerful. Not as careful as perhaps we might be in this country. And he had seen The Deer and was very excited by it and asked the writer if he could have permission to do it here. And he'd also seen other work by the writer of Cast of Characters. So we're very privileged in that respect, because I don't know of many people in this country know what's going on in Chicago, and certainly don't know these new, very exciting writers. So it's a double whammy, really, that we can get to do these plays here now, and new work, which I think is fantastic.
What's your favorite thing about this production, other than being pregnant?
That's not my favorite thing about the production.
But is it? Do you feel like it's a privilege to work while you're pregnant?
It really is. And yeah. when the casting breakdown came through for this job, I got in touch with Jack directly and just said, "Hey, does this work with a bump? Can this happen?" And he said, yeah. He said, one of them, you can just be pregnant, and the other ones, we can work around it. Which was just such a great thing for him to say anyway, because I'd kind of written theatre off. I was like, short term, there might be some telly. Yes, I can do some like bump work, but I didn't consider that I might be able to just be a regular actress.
Is that a whole genre, bump work?
I've joined a bump agency. Perhaps if I plug them, they'll actually get me some more work. There appear to be kind of photo shoots, commercials and things, but it's kind of limited.
Yeah, I imagine.
In short term.
And prior to this, because it strikes me, okay, one, you have this early play, like a pre Miss Marple play.
Absolutely.
But without being heavy-handed, there is a celebration of female voices. There is a feminism that's, you know, a joyful feminism that seems to evolve from this production. Is that something that's intentional, or?
The certainly with Trifles, I mean, it was, at the time when it was written, it was thought of as like an early feminist play anyway. Mm. So I think that was a starting point for where the rest of it got to. So then an all-female cast, playing lots of characters, showing our kind of full range, everything that we can do, I think that, yeah, there certainly is an air of feminism about it.
Well, that's a lot about the work itself, but tell me about the entertainment of the evening. Because okay, it's not so, just earnest and, you know, doing good work, no. And, you know, whatever, no.
The first play, Cast for Characters, is probably the most upbeat of the three. And so we start with a bit of a bang. It's difficult to describe, but it's very fast-paced, lots of short scenes, lots of different characters, lots of narration. So the entertainment from that, it's essentially a comedy. There's a lot of funny moments in it. You'll see a lot of different characters from only six women, so you'll see a lot of different colours, a lot of different types of characters, hence the cast of characters. And so that's probably, in terms of highs, that's probably the highest. And then we settle for trifles. It's quite a different feeling. It's a lot stiller, it's a lot quieter, it's a lot more subtle, it's a lot more about slow realizations than quick, fast-paced talk. There's a lot less said in general. And then the deer?
Yeah, the deer. What's interesting about Jack is, having been a very successful dancer, he is able to use actors not just as talking heads, but as physical performers. And I'm not a dancer, but he is certainly in the deer, which is, again, an abstract feel of a play. You're in and out of scenes. We don't have one set, two doors, you know, normal setup. He creates the situations often with our bodies as well as our lines. And I think that again moves this show forward so much, because it is a women lifting women, moving women. People stand on my back. I carry people. I never thought I could do that before. But again, he sees things so visually. And physically, visually, which I think, again, is his USP, if you like, because he doesn't stick to what the normal theatre director would see. He absolutely sees it differently. And so we're doing some very exciting stuff in The Deer, which is the third play, that I think will amaze people, actually, as how women can be physically so together. And it is not a dance, but it is a movement piece.
Wonderful. Well, it sounds like, fingers crossed, the new generation was supposed to drop these borders, drop these definitions, drop these things. And it sounds like Jack has really brought that together with the show.
I think he's leading the way, actually, at the moment.
Wow. Well, catch it while you can. Shudders is at the Park Theatre.
Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.
Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Tanya Moody. Will you introduce yourself? Let us know a little bit about your background.
Okay. Well, my name is Tanya Moody. I'm an actor. And I also train actors. I've done a master's degree in actor training, and I'm an associate teacher at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, where I was a student in the early 90s. And I'm also a mum of one.
At the moment, Intimate Apparel is a play that you will be going up at the Park Theatre, is that correct?
Yes, we just opened just the night before last.
Excellent. How's it going?
Well, you know, this particular period where you tech the show, so you, you know, we just kind of fit it into theatre and perform at the same time, was the most tiring bit. Fortunately for us, we already did a month of performance. We've done about 30 shows in Bath.
Yes, so I saw that. Yeah.
The story and the journey and the characters are in us to such a degree that if we need to make changes or adapt or adjust, it's not, you know, we can approach it like kind of jumping onto a moving horse.
Right.
You know, it's kind of, we know it well enough that we can keep the ball in the air and keep telling the stories, even if we have to make quite dramatic adjustments.
Yes, and not without adrenaline involved.
Yeah, exactly. Even through, you know, kind of quite intense tiredness, just on a practical level, but that the tiredness isn't, you know, it doesn't detract from the kind of tiredness that is detrimental. It's actually kind of like, it's satisfying, you know?
Yes. And I imagine also moving the production and having to make those changes, does that keep it fresh for you? Well, it sounds like your Buddhist training, if you will, helps you take your ego out of that. And also you get to keep learning.
Yeah, I strive to do that. I mean, of course, the ego is this thing, you know? And I think it's like, so then it's, I think it's a constant dialogue with the ego. So, you know,
Diva talking to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, then you have to kind of have this talk with it going, actually, I'm in charge now. You need to sit down and shut up and let people be with you. Think about the bigger picture.
Yes, most people have an angel on one shoulder and a devil. You have a Buddha and a diva.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. I love that. I want to get a t-shirt with one on the front and one on the back.
Yeah. Fantastic. So let's tell our audience what the story of Intimate Apparel is. Yeah, and it's also at a time, you know, 1905, it's not far from the end of slavery.
Yes.
And it's certainly a long way off from the civil rights movement.
Yes.
So it's an interesting time for a woman to try, and a black woman in particular, to try and find some power for herself.
The first black female millionaire created her business. Mm-hmm. But I found it interesting discovering her in the research to know that actually Esther's dream isn't something that's far-fetched. It's actually possible. And also New York was a cultural... I would like to say melting pot, but it sounds like a bit of a platitude.
Well, that's what... That's when that term came into existence. And I'd say it was more then than it is now.
Yes, exactly. I think you're absolutely right. And I remember in sociology class as a teenager, we had this discussion about the difference between a melting pot and a salad bowl.
Yes, you know, yes.
In a sense, I think that New York was, at that time, it was like a salad bowl in a sense, and that all these different cultures came from far and wide to try to make a better life for themselves, and then they would create...
Yes.
Of entirely separate cultures mm-hmm. that would, you know, they'd all be crammed into a tenement
yep.
and they'd all be speaking in the same language and it'd be like little microcosms of the cultures they left. Without necessarily, you know, they mingled through business and through the kind of economic promise at the time that you could very much stay in your own culture if you wanted to.
I love that informs, well, what I'm going to say, the knowledge, I'm going to go back to the Black American woman who was a millionaireess in the early 1900s. And I love that the possibility that this dream could come true must inform your performance. Let me ask you a question, because people very much know you from Prime Suspect is one thing that, you know, was widely seen. So how does that apply to the character you played in Prime Suspect?
I feel like I was being so young. I remember that. I was pre-motherhood.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a very different character. But yeah, and also it sounds like this has been part of your journey in developing your craft.
It has, you know, and I had a little think about that last night on my journey home, and the two I was thinking, do I grow more working in a theatre or in front of a camera?
Mm. Yeah.
I think the more practice you get, then you can develop. You
know? Yeah.
Depending when you're hard in that practice, you can develop. And I think, you know, if I was, you know, a great film actress that had loads and loads of practice, you know, I could probably say, actually, no, this is the medium which I can get the most growth. But for me, it's been mainly on the stage that I've been able to grow and get that kind of practice.
Well, that's the thing. And also, you know, yes, if you've, for an actor, I imagine, you know, who cares whether it's stage, screen, you know, little screen. It's, you know, being able to work is such a privilege anyway. And we get to benefit from that privilege, but...
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much, Tanya. You have been such a pleasure.
Well, thank you, Dar. I really appreciate your call. Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks so much. And if you'd like all the details, all the website details, so you can order tickets and everything, please go to our website, radiogorgeous.com, So we're talking about toxic friendship.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've been toxic as well.
Have you been toxic?
Yeah.
I was just thinking of one. Okay. Well, I don't know if it was toxic so much as just, she was bitch.
Yeah, yeah, and she brought out the bitch in you.
Yeah. I don't think I've had, you know, in the same way of like single white female or notes on a scandal, I don't think I've ever entered a friendship with the idea of undermining the other person.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and just to toy with them.
I think I have a bit. No, yeah. What I've happened is I become friends with them, then I become insanely jealous of them.
Really?
Yeah, I become insanely jealous of them, and then they, what if they say something to me, it's so exaggerated in my, you know. Yeah. So if they say something hurtful, I am so hurt.
Right.
And so dissolved by them, you know. Right. That, you know, I mean,
and do you want to get back at them?
Yeah. And then I become obsessed with, mm-hmm, yeah, like just thinking how much I hate them, and it turns into kind of jealousy and hate mixed, you know. I don't do anything evil, apart from maybe I might, in fact, I remember the one girl in particular, I just one day had a complete outburst and screamed at her for an hour, just, you know, I was so angry with her because she'd say things to me like, "You'd look really good if your legs were just about 3 inches longer."
Ow.
And the thing about you, Josephine, is that you've just got a nice, ordinary face. You know, you're just a nice English girl. You're just, you know, nice and ordinary, you know. And just, you know, the things that, you know.
Gosh, well, that to me, that sounds like, I don't know if that's toxic on her part.
Oh yeah, she was
really
toxic.
Yeah,
she brought out
really, yeah, really negative person.
Yeah, she brought out the toxic in me. Yeah. Yeah,
my husband has pointed out that I have a friend who literally, and I now I've just noticed it, it's changing the way I feel.
Oh, yeah.
But he pointed out that this friend always says something negative to
okay
me.
Give me an example.
No, he says, "Oh well, you know what you're like, oh, you're just a mess," or, you know, things like that, you know, like that
you've never noticed. You're too confident. It bounces.
Yeah, exactly.
Up.
Yeah, I just never really. I didn't.
So she's
clock
got
it.
A problem with you, your confidence. Yeah. She doesn't like it. Yeah. Get her out of your life.
Yeah. I just, it's funny because I hadn't really noticed it.
But don't you also have friends that you slightly know that you worship them a bit more than they worship you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that? Mm. Like especially kind of older women, you know what I mean, that you respect and meet, you know, or, you know, so you kind of, you
revere them in some
yeah
way,
you revere
yeah
them, and you sort of wait for them to talk to you more. Mm. You know, sometimes I can go passive, you know what I mean. I'm not always
it has been known to happen.
No, honestly, I can be, and sort of I'm like, I reflect them more, you know, and I'm more supportive of them, and everything they say I'm like, I'm slightly sucking up to them, you know.
Yeah.
But I remember someone saying, it's best not to have a friend that makes you feel crap.
Yeah, well, yeah. Yes, I would say so.
But you haven't noticed this woman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I don't know who to be madder at. Like, you know, my husband for pointing it out. But,
yeah.
But
yeah.
No, he has a point. But yeah, and then, you know, there's always the classic. I mean, because this happened, you know, people who like be nice to you and they're actually sleeping with your boyfriend. Yeah.
Okay.
That's always a nice
thing. That's never happened to me. Oh. Well, I probably haven't found out. No, that hasn't really happened to me. No. No. Has that happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
God, that's awful. So you just, she wasn't your friend then, was she?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, no.
Did you fall out with her?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I haven't had problems with fidelities. Mine's more the thing of balance of power, I'd say.
Mm.
And also, it's often because it's something to do with my mother being very blonde and glamorous, and I never really got her approval. So if I meet a woman that's like her in any way, as a kind of narcissist, it has this effect on me, the kind of jealous, you know, this kind of weird jealousy and anger all comes out. And I know it's to do with my mother, but I'm attracted to these women that slightly put me down, keep me away, keep my, you know, and I'm sort of fascinated by them. It's really...
Trying to crack the code.
Yeah. At least
again and again.
Aware of it, you know. And I haven't got anyone in my life like that now. So, apart from my dog, darling Kissy Boo, who's very glamorous and blonde.
Exactly. And, well, but she doesn't put you down.
No, no, not too much.
No, she showers you with attention.
She does. Now, what we want to know is about your toxic friendships. What's happened to you? Because Radio Gorgeous is all about giving you a voice. And we really want to know how you've been hurt. You can reveal it all to us. Contact us at info@radiogorgeous.com and we will read out your letters. So thank you so much for coming on today. Thank you for all the lovely theatrical women that are on in London this week. Thank you so much for her. And I want to read that book, Donna. Bring it to me next week.
Will do.
And who else? Sarah Tucker, you're a joy. And thank you so much to our editors. Thank you so much for everyone. RadioGorgeous.com. Radio Gorgeous Productions 2014. Here come the girls. It's a doggone shame that they couldn't all be mine. Looking so pretty, it's a doggone pity. Oh, looking so fine. Look out, brother, let me get brother a little closer to the one I love. Anything better than the opposite sex, they must have kept it above.